Jesus was once criticized for associating with sinners. And it wasn't just a blip on the screen of an otherwise clean life that this sudden blip. No, that was the way he did his life. He always associated with sinners. And it was just such a custom of his that his reputation with the religious folks was ruined. They said he's a friend of tax collectors and sinners. But they also said he's a drunkard and a glutton. Now, you can take whatever you want to of that. Rumors are like that, and they grow. They were referring to how he was always eating and drinking with somebody. He was always in someone's home. He was always at a banquet, either giving it or enjoying somebody else giving it. Some of the parables of Jesus spring out of the circumstances immediately surrounding him. And in those, he becomes one of the chief characters. The one that stays in my mind and stands out most clearly is the one when he was in Simon the Pharisee's house. You remember when he was there, Simon was one of the ruling leaders in that Jewish assembly. And while he was in the home of this man, that's when the woman came in and, you know, and fell at his feet and began to cry. She had been impacted by him prior to that. And she found out where he was, and she came and fell at his feet and began to cry and wipe his feet with her hair and to kiss his feet. Now, this turned into, it was embarrassing to Simon. He said, we're not talking about him tonight, but that's just one of those classic examples where Jesus created a parable out of the circumstances where he found himself, and he was in the middle of it. There's another one in Luke, the 10th chapter, when he was asked by one of the rulers, another Pharisee, who is my neighbor? Out of that conversation, Jesus told the parable of the what? The Good Samaritan, yeah. And then there were other places. Tonight's parable is one of those. Turn in your Bibles, if you would, to Luke, the 15th chapter. And in this 15th chapter of Luke, we find another one of those occurrences where the thing itself was, the parable was generated out of the circumstances. Look, if you will, if you're not understanding what I'm saying, it's because I'm not explaining it very well. Verse 1 of chapter 15. Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear him, but the Pharisees and the teachers of the law murmured, this man welcomes sinners and eats with them. Then Jesus told this parable. Now, all of the characters in this parable are on stage. All of the characters in especially, and there are two other parables, incidentally, before we get to the one we're going to talk about tonight. There was the parable of the lost sheep and the parable of the lost coin. But the real emotional hook is the parable of the lost boy. And that's where we'll come in just a moment. But all of the characters were on stage, especially as you depict this parable of the lost boy. The father was on stage, the older son was on stage, and the younger son was on stage. Who in this parable represented the father? Huh? Jesus. Now watch what he's doing. You see, they're criticizing him for eating with sinners. So he tells them this parable and says, in essence, this is the way my father treats people. And there were the Pharisees, the ones that were carping at him. They were the older brother. Here were the younger brothers, these sinners, the tax collectors and sinners who weren't religious. And here was Jesus standing again in between the accused and the accusers. And he says, now this is the way my father treats people. And he told them this parable, beginning in verse 11. There was a man who had two sons. The younger son said to his father, Father, give me my share of the estate. So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all that he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired men have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. I'll get up go back to my father and say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men. So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him and ran to his son, threw his arms around him and kissed him. The son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, quickly bring the best robe and put it on him, put a ring on his finger, put sandals on his feet, bring the fattened calf and kill it, and let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. What a gorgeous, absolutely magnificent story. I used to say this is just a parable. I've quit saying that. These were stories that Jesus made up on the spur of the moment. Like here, he took all of the things into consideration and off the top of his head, in a sense, but out of the bottom of his heart, he created this story that will relate to how God treats people. And that's where I hang my hat, is on these stories that Jesus told about his father. And this is why he said, I'm just telling you what I've learned in my father's presence. Well, this is a parable. The major concern for this evening is simply this, and that is to cause all of us to be aware that we all need the grace of God. You see, grace has no appeal to people who don't feel the need. But grace has no appeal to people who don't feel a need. So this parable, in a sense, this is the story of your life. This is the story of my life. We have got to put ourselves into this parable and see it as it applies to us personally, or we'll never get the real message of what he's trying to communicate. This is a parable. It's not just a story. Now, there's a difference between a parable and a story. A story is a story is a story. But a parable is a story within a story. You see the difference? A parable is an earthly story with a divine meaning. It's an earthly story with a heavenly meaning. And that's what this is. And if you'll be real observant, you'll be able to detect where along the storyline you come, where you are tonight. Now, we're all at different places. You kids are at a different place than some of those who are older. But then there's a difference in where each of you is. And this is the story of your life. And what I want you to do is peg where it is in this story that you are tonight. Because this is the story. This is your life. The word parable comes from a Greek word, parabole, from which we get two words that we use all the time. You know what a paramedic is? Okay, he's what? Someone who works alongside a doctor. A paramedic is someone who works alongside a doctor. Give me another word with using para. Parallel, two lines. A parabole, we get another word out of this word, the Greek word, balo. You know what the word balo means? It means to throw. To throw. Guess what English word we get from the word balo? Ball. Duh. And what a parable is, it's a story thrown alongside another story. It's Jesus telling us a story that we knew, and then making an application of it that we didn't know. Telling us an earthly story and then having a heavenly meaning connected to it. That's what we have here. Well, the curtain rises on this universal story, this universal life story. The background and the backdrop is very brief. Jesus just said there was a certain man who had two sons, and the younger son came and said to him, the first line of this story hits the head of the mark and hits it right on its head. Listen to these three words. The younger son came to the father, and here's the first line in this parable. Give me my. Boy, he cuts right to the chase and identifies the problem with us in our fallen condition. And you know what it is? Of course, it's selfishness. You can take the word sin and simply insert in its place the word selfishness, and you won't miss it a half of an inch. You'll not miss it at all. You'll hit it right on the head. Selfishness is sin. It's the root of sin. We were born with it. You mean to tell me you think we were born sinners? You bet I do. Now, you weren't guilty of it, but you were born a sinner. You were born looking out for your own interests. You didn't care where you were. If you were hungry, you let it fly. You cried, you squalled, you did whatever else to feed yourself. You know, you wanted something to eat. Yeah, it's born in us. I became aware of this in New Zealand when our young baby girl, who lives over in Fairfield, at about 4 months, I'm sure, I'm not sure where it was, 5 months maybe, she was just a little thing. She couldn't walk. She got so mad one day because everything didn't go exactly like she wanted. She ran back and hit her head on the floor, and it almost knocked her out. But she was so angry, and she went right back and hit it again, just banged it on the floor. And I said, "Well, you little devil." And for the first time, really, in my life, I realized that you're born with it. You're born a sinner. There's something that happened to a gene in our psyche at the fall, and it has been transmitted all the way down. Every generation that's been born has had this warped, deformed gene in our makeup, our psyche. Well, give me my. Now, I want to ask you, probably, you'll say, "Well, my husband is still in that stage." And some husbands are going to say, "Well, my wife is still in that stage. Give me my." And the mothers and daddies in here are going to say, "Well, that sure does describe my children. Give me my." Well, is that where you are tonight? It may be. This young man said, "Give me my." But what he was talking about here and what it represents such an atrocious sin against his father. Henry Nouwen describes it in his book called The Return of the Prodigal. It's a great book if you want to read it. But Jesus tells it all so simply and so matter-of-factly that it's difficult to realize fully that what is happening here is an unheard-of event. Hurtful, offensive, and in radical contradiction to the most venerated tradition of the time. And then he says, Kenneth Bailey, he refers to this writer, in his penetrating explanation of this story, shows that the son's manner of leaving is tantamount to wishing his father dead. Listen to this. "For over 15 years, Bailey says, I have been asking people of all walks of life, from Morocco to India and from Turkey to the Sudan, about the implications of a son's request for his inheritance while the father was still living. The answer has always been emphatically the same." The conversation runs as follows. "Has anyone ever made such a request in your village?" "Never." "Could anyone ever make such a request?" "Impossible." "If anyone ever did, what would happen?" "His father would beat him, of course." "Why?" "The request means that he wants his father to die." Now, that's how serious it was in this story that Jesus tells. Jesus creates it, sets it in its own setting, and then but it's so quickly gone across that we forget. This man, this young boy, was saying, "I wish you were dead." Did you ever hear or did you ever say that to your parents? Did you ever think that of your parents? Anyway, this is what it represented. He said, Give me my part of the inheritance. And then a few days later, he gathered it all up and went into a distant country and squandered his wealth. Now, the distant country, he wasn't just going there so he could see the world. He didn't go off on a jaunt. When this young boy, set in a Jewish setting, left home, took all that his father had given him, and went off into a far country and wasted his substance. Now, this translation said he squandered his wealth. But there's something about this, the translation, he wasted his substance. He wasted his substance. And how devastating that is. You've been given a substance, and you kids, your substance is is yours, and it's in the fullest. Yours is flowering, it's blooming. Your substance is almost limitless. Many of us here have already used our substance. Some of us have wasted our substance, but you yet to come. You've got your, how you deal with your substance. It's up to you. But he went to this far country. Now, we'll miss the implications and the application of this parable unless you realize one single simple thing. The far country is not a geographical location. Now, in the story it is, but not in the parable. In the story, it is a far country. It's a geographical location. Oh, but in the parable, it's much more than that. You can leave home without ever leaving your house. You know what the far country here is? It's the alienation, the separation, the animosity, the hurt, the anger that causes you to be separated from your mother and father, from your brothers and sisters. This anger and this alienation that takes place that you know all too well, you've experienced it in your own life. That's the far country. Kids, when you get so angry with your mother and father because you don't like the rules, and this boy probably didn't like the rules, we're going into elaborating on a story, on a parable, but he didn't like what was going on in his father's house, and so he said, give me what's mine right now, and then he left. When you display an attitude towards your parents, when you get so angry, you stomp off into your own room and slam the door and sulk. Adults do it. Adults sulk. They get so mad at each other they could kill each other. Your mom and dad, they'll tell you, if they'll be truthful, they'll tell you that there are days when they don't like each other. In fact, there are days when they just about hate each other. Hate and love are similar. They're kind of kin. And they often go through and she may just say, you're sleeping on the couch tonight. And he may say, I don't know what all he'd say. But you can leave home and never leave the house. Do you live in a house that's alienated? Is it dysfunctional? Do you know how to establish relationships, loving relationships, so that you care and nourish one another? It may be that you don't, but it may be that that's where you are. You may be in the far country tonight, and yet you've never left home. Now, sometimes children do leave home. I remember some years ago while we were living in Muskogee, Oklahoma, I saw a picture of a girl on the paper, front page of the paper. It was just her body. It was a picture of her lying there on a dirty sheet, on a dirty bed in a motel. I don't know whether she had committed suicide or had just simply died of a drug overdose inadvertently. But there she lay, pregnant. She was sick with venereal disease, pregnant, addicted to drugs, and lying there dead. She had left home. She didn't like what was going on in her parents' home, and she left in rebellion, and she did literally waste her substance. And I looked at that picture, and I thought, my goodness, what a wasting of her substance. She had the capacity, you see, to be a loving mother. She could have, had she approached it properly, she could have been a mother who had this little baby and she nourished it and loved it and nursed it. That's what she had, but she wasted her substance. So you can leave home, but you don't have to leave home. You can be sullen and you can be hateful and you can be disrespectful, and all those things indicate, in a sense, I wish you were dead. I'm tired of living in this house. Give me my. And if I don't get me my, Katie, bar the door. Okay. Now, so remember, the geographical location, the distant country is not a geographical location. If you got that, all right, because if you don't catch that one part of this parable, you'll miss it. Well, when he had spent everything, there came a famine. Now, when he says when he spent everything, it indicates that he did this in a manner that was legal. He had money. He didn't steal anything. He had money. He paid for this and he paid for that, and he just lived high on the hog. No pun intended, because later on he was with the hogs. But he was living high on the hog, doing things that were right, I guess, buying things that were legal, paying for things in a manner that was proper. But then one day in the bar, perhaps you can just imagine, he reached down into his bag of coins, and there wasn't anything left in there. He had already said drinks are on the house, but he couldn't find any money. He said when he had spent everything, there arose this famine in the land, and he began to be in want. Well, I wonder why he didn't go to some of his friends that he'd been drinking with. They were gone. They were gone. He found out that you don't have any friends when your money's gone. At least he didn't. And he said that nobody gave him anything. Well, and that's the final end of sin anyway. The final end of selfishness is aloneness. The final end of sin is just simply depravity and bankruptcy. The final end, when you finally come to the place that you've spent all your substance, then the time comes and you realize, I have nothing. Is this all there is? And he was so despondent, he was so depressed, that he was ready to take his own life. It seemed he sat down and began to think. This spent was gone. There was a man in Little Rock, about 45 years old. He was a Jewish man. And when he hit middle age, I was with him one night, and he just said, is this all there is? Have you ever felt that? There may be some of us older ones who perhaps have a midlife crisis because you're getting down to the end of your substance and you know your life energy is being spent and it's getting close to the place where you realize I've searched for it all my life and I thought I had it but I never could get a hold of it. And then you say, is this all there is? And let me just tell you, that's always the harvest that sin produces. It's the final depravity, the final discouragement, the final exhausting of what you had, and to realize that you really don't have anything anyway. Well, he hired himself out to feed pigs. Now, this is a Jewish setting. What does the feeding of pigs represent here, you think? That's the lowest you can get. You can't get any lower than for a Jewish person to be sent out into the fields to feed pigs. And there are some of us here. That was below him. That was beneath. And if somebody had told him as he left the father's house, if his father had said, son, it won't be long before you'll be feeding pigs, he would have said, get a grip. You don't know what you're talking about. That's not me. He couldn't see it. But he ended up feeding pigs. As a Jewish boy, feeding pigs was as low as you could stoop. I wonder if we just took a toll tonight and had everybody tell what they've done that they're so absolutely ashamed of. That's what this represents here tonight. Is this where you are? You may have been there, and you may want to just check that off and say, well, I'm not there anymore. Well, if you're not there anymore, you know, pig pens come in different sizes. Some of them come with carpet from wall to wall. Some pig pens come in a $50,000 automobile. Some pig pens... What is the size and shape of your pig pen? It may be that you're still in it and don't recognize that it is a pig pen. Kids, be careful. Pig pens come in different sizes. Well, he was so hungry for fulfillment, he was at the point of despair. And then there's this wonderful statement. He came to his senses. He came to his senses. You know, I think that's the finest hour in the life of a sinner, when you come to your senses. The thing that's so interesting here is that what was it that brought him to his senses? What was it that brought him to his senses? It was his nose. Now, you want to tell me why do you think it was his nose? It was his mind, his mind's nose. You've heard of people say, in his mind's eye. Well, this one was in his mind's nose. What did he begin smelling in his mind's nose that transcended the pig pen? Home cooking. He said he could almost smell that yeast bread in his father's house. And he said, what servants of my father don't have enough bread and to spare? And here I am starving to death. His nose was what made this man turn himself back toward his father. Now watch what Jesus does here. What about the motive for this boy going home? Was it very noble? Was it that he said, you know, I've really hurt my father and I'm so sorry and I'm going to go home? No. He said, I'm starving to death. Now you may think, well, now that's not a noble enough grounds upon which to return to God. Hey, there isn't any other ground that we've got to return to God but that. We're broken. We're sinners. The only time you and I will ever turn to God is when our back is against the wall and we haven't got any other way to go. And Jesus recognizes it, and the thing, wonder of wonders, he accepts that motive that's not as noble as it ought to be. He accepts it. Well, he said, I'm going home. The finest hour in the life of a sinner. Now that's what we call repentance. That's what we call this decision. And without it, you'll never go back home. You'll just content yourself to stay in the pig pen. And the world wants you to love your pig pen. And it'll tell you how to clean your teeth and how to smell good and how to do all the, and how to cure the wrinkles that you're going to have in a few years. They've got putty that, man, they've got stuff. And they'll just say, just stay where you are. No, don't be afraid. You're okay. And they'll give you a new car, and then they'll have you trade for that, and then they'll give you credit. And if you haven't got enough credit cards, they'll give you some more credit cards, and they'll give you that without any credit check, and they'll just say, let's live it up and just stay where you are. But I pray to God that every one of us will have that nose, that we sniff that bread and it brings back those memories of our Father's house, and we come running. He got up and took off running. The man, you can just picture the man that owned the pig saying, hey, where are you going? He said, I'm going home. He said, well, I haven't paid you for today. He said, I about got all the pay I can stand. I'm going home. And so he took off to his father. I'm so glad that the father did not do this. Look through the window and see, oh, well, here he comes. Well, I figured it'd happen. He's probably out of money. Yep, well, I'll just sit here and let him grovel a bit. And he just flips the paper, you know, and keeps reading. And the knock on the door. The father says, who is it? That's not the way this story goes. This father saw him coming a long way off, it said. And he ran to meet him. He ran to meet him and threw his arms around him and began to kiss him much, the text says. He began to kiss him much. And the boy began to make his apology. He began to say, oh, Father, forgive me. I've sinned against heaven and against your sight, and I'm not worthy to be called your son. And there was some more of the apology, but his daddy cut him off. He didn't even let him finish his speech that he had rehearsed all the way from the pig pen hole. His father said, quick. Now, the word, it's like quick. In other words, don't fool around. Go get the best robe. Go get some shoes. Go get a ring and kill that fattened calf we've been saving. Let's have a party. And they began to dance and play and have the best time because he said, my son was dead. Now he's alive. He was lost and now he's found. Now, where along this parable did you find yourself? Is it where he says, give me my? Are you still there where you're still looking for your stuff all the time? Or have you already left home and gone into the far country? Even though you're still in the house, you're out of sorts and your nose is out of joint. Oh, wow. And that you live every day and you get up every day not liking your brothers and not liking your sisters and not liking them. You may be there and you're in the far country and perhaps didn't know it. Or have you spent everything? You haven't. You kids here tonight have not spent everything. It's still ahead of you. It determines what you do, you can determine that yourself, but you've still got it. Many of us haven't. So we would perhaps be in that area where we have spent everything, and then be being hired out to feed the pigs, and then maybe you've come to your senses, and maybe you've come home. But you say, well, I haven't found myself in any of those places. Oh, then you must be in the position of the older brother. But that's another story for another time. We'll take it up later. But where are you? This song that we're going to sing, Love for All and Can It Be? See my Father waiting stands, see Him holding out His hands. This is the most beautiful story. And this song captures the spirit of the story. May I just urge you all, and may I urge myself, to ask the question, where are you in this storyline? Because we're all prodigals and we all need to go home. And it'll be your nose that takes you. You'll sense your father's house and your loss and your lack of what he can provide. And may I just simply say, there ain't no place like home. And until you sense that, grace really won't make much sense to you. It makes no sense to those who don't feel a need.